strangers among us.
It's Wrecking Ball Radio. This is Stavin's Den.
And we are back. Joe is here. Hi, Joe.
Yes, it's nice not to be in front of a steering wheel now.
Yeah, it's nice to see you.
I have to concentrate on. I could concentrate on doing my job here instead of working, cutting around traffic.
You did a fine job of multitasking.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, so I guess we'll get right to it. We got some school fools with the SATs changing what they're doing, trying to level the playing field, as they say. A man in Joe's neck of the woods was banned from going into a bar because of his turban. And let's see, we got a rugby player fired over his religious beliefs. And what else we got here? We got a where's my Chick-fil-A story? Where the fuck is Chick-fil-A? And Chick-fil-A on government land. We'll see if that's allowed to happen in Texas or not, because they're very anti-gay. But first we'll play the old School of Fools music as soon as I can find that. Walt's like, yeah, you know, you could hear spaces when, you know, you're looking for stuff. I'm like, yeah, because I'm fucking doing it all myself.
Yeah,
that's how this shit works. Stupid.
When did he come in? He could have come in.
He couldn't make it.
Okay.
He couldn't make it. So, all right, here we go.
Ring around the rosy, bucket full of posies. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down.
Shame, shame, shame.
School of Fools.
Now I just remembered I have to find the audio for this, too. I'm making a lot of work for myself.
Yeah. Maybe we should have a talk with you after the show.
After I'm done with the bug.
Yeah, straighten that out, too.
There's a bug I have on timeout. Where the fuck is it? Oh, here it is. Here we go. All right, play that. Boost that.
Changing, students will still get those verbal and math scores, but along with those numbers, each student will be assigned an adversity score.
The adversity rating is a 15... factor formula, and only the College Board knows what that formula is, to show the difficulties that students may have had in life that may have affected their SAT scores.
The adversity score will rate students' hardships based on their social and economic backgrounds. The score will be between 1 and 100. The higher the score means the student has had more disadvantages in life. The number won't be based on race, but will take into account the quality of a student's high school and crime rate and poverty level of where they live. But how those factors are weighed is shrouded in secrecy. David Bloomfield, a professor of education at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center, says that's part of the problem.
There is very little transparency. The students and their families won't even know what their adversity score is, so there will be false positives, false negatives.
The College Board administers the SAT, which is taken by 2 million students a year. The adversity rating will not affect a student's test scores, but will be reported only to college admissions offices. We spoke with students who say there's too much emphasis on standardized testing.
This is something I'm trying to make a life for, so if I don't get accepted into a grad school because of a simple score that bases my intellect that you barely know about me, what can I do?
There's way too much secrecy within it, and I really do think it's for the look. Like, they don't really care. It's more for their image rather than like actual the people who really need it.
The College Board has faced years of criticism of unfairness because affluent students fare better on the SAT. This also comes as more universities are calling for less emphasis on standardized testing and comes on the heels of the bombshell college admissions scandal where dozens of wealthy parents allegedly paid money to cheat on the SAT.
For the first time, they're admitting that there's a wealth bias to the SAT. That's really the big story. Now they're trying to correct for that with this thing called the adversity score.
Shirley Chan for Pixar.
All right, so the SAT is one of the two main college entrance exams in the U.S. The adversity test is to help level the playing field of students of diverse social economic backgrounds. The numbers will not be reported to the students, only the college admissions officers, and will be based on 15 factors, including crime rate, poverty level in the student's home neighborhood, the College Board, the company that administered the test told newspaper. Students of privileged backgrounds tend to score higher on the standardized test than students facing more hardship. Students from households with reported incomes of at least $200,000 average 250 points higher on the test than students whose household incomes are less than $20,000, according to the journal. That's a lot. That's a big difference. White students scored an average of 177 points higher than black students in 2017, while Asian students scored on average of 63 points higher than white students, according to the National Center of Education Statistics. There are a number of amazing students who have scored less on the SAT but have accomplished more. David Coleman, chief executive of the College Board, told the Journal, "We can't sit on our hands and ignore the disparities of wealth reflecting the SAT." The organization said the tool was beta tested by 50 colleges last year. An official version is expected to be used by 150 institutions this fall, expanding more broadly in 2020. The College Board did not respond to requests for comment. Critics of the SAT and other main college entrance exam, the ACT, say the tests provide an advantage to privileged students. Though the new tool has been embraced by college admissions officers seeking to diversify their institution's student bodies, it could draw backlash from students of white and Asian families who are already achieving higher than average scores. "We've got to admit the truth. The wealth inequality has progressed to such a degree that it isn't fair to look at test scores alone," Coleman told the Associated Press. "You must look at them in context of the adversity students face." Hundreds of colleges in recent years have decided to make SAT and ACT scores optional in their application process, but that number has sharply risen over the last few months in response to concern over fairness and inequality. "The conversation about the access to higher education has been simmering for a long time." David Hawkins, Executive Director for Educational Content and Policy of the National Association for College Admission Counseling. "It's starting to take shape in a way that we really are examining every aspect of the admission process to understand fully how it either promotes or inhibits access." Did you take the SATs?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, I did. That was a big fucking deal.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
That was very – there wasn't really an opt-out option. You had to take the SATs.
No, I didn't take
them. And then you take – like at school, you took the PSATs?
No.
They didn't make you take those?
No.
Do you know – have you seen what an SAT looks like?
I've seen them, yeah. It's a generalization. It's a tough test.
Yeah, it's actually changed since I took it. But, yeah, it's I was not aware of any biases. It was like only after I'd taken the test that I started to hear of biases. But as a white male, I guess in a middle-class neighborhood, I certainly didn't hear of any biases. Do you like the idea of them trying to level the playing field?
Well, it depends on the factors on this. Basically, it's not based on test scores. So when they break down the SAT, when a college looks at an application, how much is it based on the test score, and then how much is it based on the background? And that's a key thing.
Well, I mean, back in my day, the test score and your grades, and then the essay you wrote to get into, like, they would ask you to write an essay for admissions, and that's what you would do. But the SAT was a big score. But we also, I don't think we had the economic disparity that we have now. I mean, there was economic disparity, but it certainly wasn't as talked about and as known as we have now.
Right, and that's the key thing, because they're saying here that basically it's not going to be based on test scores. But they're going to have all this criteria. I don't agree.
Well, it is going to be a bit. They're going to level the playing field. So if you come from a poor neighborhood and you don't score well, they're going to take that into consideration.
Right. I think that's wrong. I don't think you're getting in there on your academic merit. Now, with that being said, we're not solving the problem here. Okay. With that being in mind, instead of adjusting the test scores, what they need to do is work with the schools to work on more SAT prep. Now,
but here's the thing with that. Then you start getting to, and this is what they did with the, I can't fucking think of the name, with the teaching to the core program. Then you get these teachers teaching to the test, which isn't necessarily the best way to teach. So if you just want them to teach to a standardized test, that's not really giving the kids the best education either.
But it is based on what the SATs are looking for. Also, what they mentioned, this was also discussed on a radio show I listen to every morning, and they called in, and a lot of libraries offer SAT prep. Now you could say, well, what about the poor neighborhoods? That you need to look into. But
we've talked about on this show how hard it is in some of these neighborhoods to get good teachers, the way they're fucking treated and how much money. I mean, you're just – listen, if you're in a rough neighborhood, it's hard to get good teachers.
But it's,
and if the kids are hungry, which a lot of these poor families are coming from, you know, we've talked about too on the show how sometimes the only real meal these kids are getting is the lunch the school provides and everything. That all factors into it. It's hard to focus when your stomach is rumbling.
You know what, though? There was a my brother would mentor some kids. They would come up to the farm. They liked being up at the farm. And there was a young girl there that was going to college that was able to get a college degree based on that she was Puerto Rican. And my brother was talking to her, and she said, well, you know, you could take this, but basically everybody's going to look at you and look at you where you've gotten because you got a break because you're Puerto Rican.
Yeah, but nobody would know. That? Nobody would know.
But still,
and they don't tell you. They don't tell you. You got a break because you're Puerto Rican.
She would know. But the thing about it is that it should be based on academic scores. The need to work with the schools to work in these neighborhoods where, and obviously, and you know, like I said, and it's a cultural thing as well. Basically, in you know the poorer neighborhoods, there's no father figure. The mother's working and all this thing, and is not there to, you know, there's no father figure there or a figure there that could stress that they study or make sure they're.
But if they're showing but if they're showing these kids that they're letting in, who are coming from these tough circumstances but don't have the SAT scores, are excelling in college and beyond, it negates the point you're making that these kids don't deserve it. They just weren't given the opportunity. These were smart kids. They just, before they got to college, did not have the opportunity, the advantages that, say, you or I did or somebody else or an Asian person or somebody else might have. I don't think they're looking at race. I think they're looking more at poverty, crime, and stuff. And you can't make a community safe, you know, if you're the SATs. I mean, God, the government can't do it. The police can't do it. Parents can't do it. Nobody can do it alone. So you're asking a lot from a standardized test.
But I'm asking a lot for the schools to nurture these kids where they could go.
But
take
we got Betsy DeVos, who's cutting all the money to public education and, you know, funneling it to charter schools. I mean, not that money's the only resource, but you take the money out. You got hungry kids. We've talked about time and time again some of the hardships the teachers are facing. You know what? This doesn't seem like a bad idea. If you have proof that these kids who score 200 points less on the SATs are excelling where kids who score more on the SATs aren't, then that's all the proof you need. Now, that being said, when I was in college, I think a perfect score on the SATs at the time was 1,600. I think it was like 800 on math, 800 on English, the verbal. So there was a kid in my fraternity. He was from a foreign country. And he got a 600. And we're like, on which part? And he's like, no, on everything. So I don't know. Don't know if that's the answer either. But no, I mean, if it works, if they're not just looking at race, if they're finding a way, if they're able to get. Because the worst thing that can happen is you have these really smart kids that can never achieve their potential because they weren't given an opportunity. That's the worst. Because you don't know, one of these kids.
Well, what do you mean never given an opportunity?
If you have somebody who comes from a bad background, you know, somebody not even necessarily a bad background, maybe you know, very poor. They have to work a lot. I worked, but I, you know, not because we were very poor, but I worked. But they're working all the time. You know, they're not really eating. But they're a smart kid, and you can show that. And they're a smart kid, and if you level the playing field for them, all of a sudden they become a top scholar. You know, they cure cancer or whatnot, or just become really productive members of society. If you can show that, if we could just give these kids the opportunity, not based on their color, but based on what they've done up until then, and then looking at their score, that's not a bad thing.
But if you have that person that smart and that hungry to achieve, they should be able to get a passing score on the SAT.
No, it's not. But no, that's just it. There's no passing or failing on the SATs. It's not. The SATs are just, this is what you get. You're going up against everybody else. So you know say you come from a really poor neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is from their research, it's a lot harder to, say, get a 1,200 out of 1,600, which is not the way they do it now, but it was then. It's a lot harder for them to get a 1,200 in a poor neighborhood than from somebody who comes in a more affluent neighborhood. Those kids aren't getting 1,200s. They're getting 1,400s. but you're being compared to the other 1,200 kids. So they're trying to level the playing field. How smart are you? If we give you the opportunity and we give you the tools based on your academics, and we take into a fact, they're trying to get the best of the best. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to figure out how can we get this. It's very competitive. If you're going to have students, if you're going to have a school, you want to have the best of the best. So listen, I think it's worth a shot. If it doesn't work, you stop doing it.
I don't like it, but I think that it's up to the schools.
Well, the schools seem to be on board.
But the schools to get them.
You're asking too much of the schools. It's like we ask too much of the schools, and we ask too much of the police.
You know what? We pay in school taxes.
I understand.
We're not asking enough.
But you and
schools.
I come from decent neighborhoods. We're paying a good amount of taxes. My school system is very good. They had the budget today for the first time in forever. I didn't make it. I come from a good school system. We pay a lot of taxes. We have a very people move here for this school system. So really, this would hurt my daughter. But that's okay, because I think she'll be fine either way. Listen, so people will always climb to the top if they're really, really good. Some will always make it out, but maybe not enough. You know, for every Mariano Rivera who grew up in the Dominican Republic playing shortstop with a box for a baseball glove. That's what he grew up, box for a baseball glove, and he became the greatest relief pitcher of all time. There might be other kids that would be very good, maybe not Mariano Rivera, but they don't get the opportunity. Where, like, you or I might get the opportunity because we have good equipment. It's giving us good equipment. That's what it's like. Making sure everybody has the same equipment.
Yeah. It's your urge to, you know, your tenacity to do something. When I was on football team, the football team went away to camp, and I didn't have money to go to camp. And the guys come back a week later. And you know, majority of the plays. And me and two other guys that were varsity, you know, a couple other guys that didn't go to camp, who were varsity the previous year, we got cut. I quit. I never quit anything. It was just like, what's the point? But it's your tenacity to do something. If my tenacity was to do so, I mean, in Rotgut, I was put on the shelf because it was a different type of music, and I wasn't. I had the tenacity to get back in.
But we're talking about these kids' lives. I mean, chances are, understood. Even if you stuck with the team, you weren't going to be an NFL player.
That's what you need to tell the schools. I mean, you're lowering the standard. And there's too much.
Well, when
of
we treat the teachers
standard.
Like shit, and we're taking all the money out of the school budgets. I mean, and the parents are working two or three jobs between them. I mean, and the kids have to work. At some point, something's got to give. I mean, at some point, you need a hand up. And again, you're not getting this because you're black or you're Puerto Rican or you're Jewish or whatever you are. You're getting this because comparatively, somebody in your circumstances, you would have done just as well or better than somebody who had the best prep classes and wasn't hungry at all. Listen, I say give it a shot. If it doesn't work, so be it.
I say don't lower the standard or lower that. I say work with the schools and
But they don't teach the SATs in schools. You would go to something called the Princeton Review, which is a private which is something private. You did, like, I did Princeton Review for the law SATs, the LSATs that they're called. I didn't do it for the regular SATs. But that's what the parents who have some money do. They send you to these prep programs. They don't really do a lot of teaching in school. They do some, but they don't really go over. Like, when you take these prep classes, they'll give you like the last year's SATs. So you can actually take all these practice tests. And now think about that. You're a lot less nervous if you've been exposed to the test, if it's not something brand new to you. And you feel a lot more confident. And there's also a certain skill to test taking. Some people that are very smart just aren't good at test taking. I mean, that's just a thing. So I don't even think they should emphasize these standardized tests that much.
Right. And like I said, a lot of places, like a lot of libraries, do offer this. Now, you're probably going to turn and go, well, in some of these neighborhoods, they probably don't. Good point, Davin. Glad
you handled that.
But my thing is that they need to do something.
But who is they?
Who? Government. Government.
But you don't want big government. You want your taxes cut.
But if it's going to be part of the taxes that I pay, part of
it. These schools.
It would go into the budget for the library if it's part of the tax.
But,
you know.
But that's just it. These schools. How many times have we talked about, whether on air or off air, where these teachers have to buy the fucking school supplies for the kids? I mean, the budgets aren't there. Now, are you going to tell me they waste money? And I'm going to go, yes, absolutely. That certainly happens.
They do waste money. I understand that,
but that's not all of it.
It's enough of it where it's like, well, the teachers, you know, they're squandering money on teachers. No, they're not. They're wasting money on so much other stuff in a bureaucratic.
You got to have school buses. That's part of it.
I understand, but it's like
you want these kids exposed to music, right?
Yeah, but the thing about
that's
it
part
is
of it.
But that is a section with music and stuff like that. But I'm talking about the nuts and bolts where you give a school like a maintenance budget, and they have a maintenance budget, and they and every year what they'll do is, wow, you know what, we have extra money left over. Let's order another 12 water fountains that we're not even going to use, so we could say, hey, we spent this money.
Yeah, I think that's an extreme case.
But no, it's not an extreme case. I used to sell to school.
That's problem. Yeah, you crack down on that, but you're not going to solve all the problems with it. Yes, of course you crack down on that.
But like I said, in going this way instead of lowering the standard, let's see.
I don't.
If
but it's not lowering
to
the standard.
Raise the standard.
They're not
the
lowering the standard. They're just trying to get a better assessment in their view. They're not saying, oh, you come from here, you only have to get 700. They're saying we can evaluate you better. We think you're really smart. We think this is why you score $200 left in the people from the town where they're all driving Bentleys for whatever, just to exaggerate whatnot. But we think you're just as smart, so we want to give you the opportunity. We don't want to reject you based on a number. They did a lot of research into this. That's why I say give it a shot. They did all the research. They ran a test program with 50 schools. They're expanding. If it's horseshit, they'll get rid of it. That's fine. I mean, we're always experimenting.
I want it stopped now.
Well, that's not happening. Listen, I am all for giving young people the best chance to achieve their potential, whatever that potential may be. Whether it's being the best air conditioner repair guy they could be, or being a chemist or a brain surgeon, whatever the best they could be, I'm all for giving young people a leg up, because this is going to sound corny, but the children are the future. You want to compete with China, you know, you want to do all this shit, you got to emphasize education. That's really what it is. So when you hear about, it's very short-sighted for our nation. If you really love our country and you're worried about the long-term future, not just the future of the country while you're living on it, then you got to invest wisely in education, and more importantly, in the youth. You have to do these things. Now, this might be right. This might be completely wrong. You know what? They might, after 10 years, go, it didn't work. Joe Curry was right. We were just promoting a bunch of people that didn't deserve it. Then you fucking stop it. But you know what? Common Core wasn't tried until it was tried. Try this. They seem to like the results so far. Why not? I don't got a problem with it.
I like to see the criteria, the rating.
Well, see, that's the problem. It's very, very secretive. That's the part I don't like.
Right, and also, to give an example, maybe I'm so biased against this. A buddy of mine went to take the police test. He actually became a cop, but he was taking the police test, and he was taking the test, and he said, one of the questions is, are you white? And
that should not be on there.
Well, what's your background? Are you white? Stuff like that. And
that's usually
optional. And you got to answer the question. And another cop said they're going to take points off when you write.
Yeah, that's not this though.
And he go, you know, but like I said, well, I don't know why you're having a problem with this, Joe. This, based on other things I've seen, it's kind of bleeding.
Right, but that's not
maybe,
this. There's 15
but I'm
criteria.
Where my feeling is, where I would think this way.
Right.
Where I would think this
Listen,
way.
I,
so,
I
and, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. And based on me thinking this way, this is why I'm curious to see what the questions are. And you come, well, it's secretive. So, and I kind of see your point on, look, we'll see how it goes. I'm for it. We'll see how it goes. Maybe because based on, well, you know, what are these questions? What's this evaluation process?
They seem
process?
To like it. And there seems to be this bias that they've been talking. Like, I think one of the things is that a lot of the questions, because the English part, there's a lot of questions. A lot of reading comprehension. At least it used to be back when I took it. I don't know what it is now. I'll know soon enough again, as I have to get immersed with my daughter. There would be things that like minorities or poor people couldn't relate to. The scenarios, they just couldn't relate to something like that. So now you're in this stressful situation. You don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. Mm. So that'd be like some of the biases where like you and I, you know, we would just read and go, oh, this is a story. This is relatable to us because we know people like this.
Well, let me tell you something. One of the toughest tests I've ever, and I passed them, but was the certification for Certified Purchasing Manager, which is essentially an accountant getting their CPA. And you would take these modules. They take four modules, and then you get tested on it by the National Association of Purchasing Managing. And the problem is you go to take a test, and they're giving you a question. And there's three ways you could approach it. how your professor taught you, and I'm a purchasing agent already, what I did today and how the association feels the way the answer could be. And it was nerve-wracking.
That's a problem with the test.
And there's a nerve-wracking because let's say you learn history. Washington crossed the Delaware. Yeah, he did. You know, he did. He crossed the fucking Delaware. But in this, it's like three theories. My professor's theory, how I do it in regular day-to-day practice, and how the board feels the fucking question should be answered. It never it was.
So then wouldn't you be happier if they worked on the test to improve it so you didn't have three fucking scenarios where there was more or less a correct way to do it? I mean, make it a more effective test.
Make it a more
effective. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to make this more effective.
Yeah and no. Yeah and no. The not the test questions themselves, the evaluation process.
I think they've already worked on some of the questions.
Well, then that's fine. But the evaluation process, like I said, I'm curious
to see what the criteria of the evaluation part. You're already a purchasing manager and you answer it a certain way, that's good information to have. Now it's not just a wrong answer.
You can tell the fucking board that.
No, but listen to me. If they have the context, and that's what this is all about, context on how we're evaluating students. So if they have the context of your experience, okay, it's not a wrong answer. He's applying it in everyday person. He's not applying theory. He's applying how to get the job done and move on to the next. It gives you a better evaluation of if Joe Curry's going to pass the test. That's what they're trying to do.
Another example is when I was in college, I was taking a business management course, and he gave a whole list of things, you know, how to assign stuff. And I actually had one of the things to do was I had the manager cleaning the bathroom, and the guy marked that wrong. And I go, why is this wrong? Well, the manager doesn't clean the bathroom. Really? If you got people doing everything else, you're about to open. That bathroom is the most important thing in your business. Why wouldn't I clean the bathroom? Everything has to get done. Well, you know, because it's a real life scenario over.
See, but you're arguing my point. You want context. You feel you would have been judged better if it was given context.
If I had the evaluation of the if that's a one of the evaluation criteria,
because we're talking about your experiences. They're talking about these people's experiences. That's what it is. They want these people's experience. They're trying to get an idea. What is their day like before they sit down and take this test? That's how we can evaluate. So now Joe's answer isn't wrong if we know, oh, wait a sec, he does this for a living.
I would still like to see the questions.
Well, I mean, that's a different thing. It's not questions. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that would be nice. I'd like a little bit more transparency.
And Dad, that's what I mean. I want to see that evaluation process. If the evaluation process is along the lines of what you said, and we see what these kids are, and the regular scores these kids are getting before the SATs, you know, I'd be like, all right, you know. But until I know that,
I think that's what some of the kids were complaining about, too. It's like, we have no idea what this is based on. Like, and the audio that we were listening, some of them were students go, we don't know what this is based on, that we want transparency. I think that's what they got to do. Make it so we have a better idea. I mean, we did read off some of the qualifications.
Right. But if you make it more transparency on that.
I took the LSATs to get into law school.
Right.
I had fucking Super Tramp, The Long Way Home, stuck in my head the whole fucking time. It was miserable. Yeah. Remember that song, Take the Long Way Home? Yeah. That's fucking song. I'm trying to concentrate to get into law school, and I got Super Tramp on fucking loop in my head for 3 hours.
It's hysterical.
No, it was not.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, it could be nerve. Like I said, those module tests, they were fucking nerve-wracking. It's the way you do it, the way your professor discussed it, and the way the board feels like a band sometimes. You know, and it's like, and those cost money.
These cost money too.
Yeah,
you don't get to take the SATs for free. And like I said, you know, if your family has money and they want you to do well, you take prep classes.
Yeah,
and you know, I think it's good. We'll see what happens with it. Let's see. Not from your neck of the woods. Gurvinder Grewal, a recent Stony Brook graduate, went out to meet pals after midnight Saturday night at Harbor Grill in Port Jefferson. How far are you from Port Jefferson?
Not that far. I'm about, PJ's probably about 7 miles.
But the Sikh 23-year-old was embarrassed when security didn't let him in wearing his religious headwear. I felt shocked, embarrassed, and hurt, Grewal told the Post. I never encountered a situation where I was refused service or entry into an establishment for wearing a turban. A Harbor Grill manager told Grewal that he would not be allowed in with a head covering. He was wearing what would be more widely perceived as the slang term do-rag or stocking cap and not traditional turban, the restaurant wrote in a lengthy Facebook comment after residents expressed outrage. I'm going to need this guy's head. Picture this guy's head. Greenwald's license shows him wearing the same style of religious turban. Aha! It's my ID, you cocksucker. I explained to the manager that it was a turban and I wore it to practice my religion. However, he kept telling me that it was the owner's policy. I explained that I just wanted to hang out with some friends for the night and even went to the back of the line to try and explain my situation again a second time, which did not work. The fine dining spot with waterfront views enforces a dress code after 10. Why after fucking 10? On Friday and Saturday nights. The rules restrict all headwear. The manager told Grewal it was a new policy. We do not allow hats or headwear in order to more capably identify people inside the establishment. The restaurant said that Harbor Grill embraces people of all races and religions and does not discriminate against anyone based on their creed or color. We sincerely apologize for any distress that this incident may have caused. Please know that our weekend dress code policy is in place for the safety of all our patrons. Anyone wearing any type of hat is welcome during normal restaurant hours. Grewal told the Post that post-Jefferson Mayor Marjo Garant apologized to him for the incident and advised him on actions to take on the issue. Grewal tried to obtain a police report today at Suffolk County Precinct, but was told it was a civil matter, not a criminal matter. The officer recommended I contact a civil attorney or the ACLU. I plan to reach out to them tomorrow. Grewal, who works as a city MD, volunteers as an EMT at Stony Brook, he said. We often are requested to cover some calls in Port Jefferson, so I was hurt to find out that I wouldn't be allowed to enter an establishment in the community I serve. Throughout my life, I've faced verbal abuse and bullying about my appearance, mostly throughout school. However, my basic freedoms of entering public accommodations was never infringed upon. I think I know how you're going to go, but I'll ask. Who's right? Oh, I got an
It... You could say, well, you know, the whole thing about it is that I work in bars all the time, and trying to talk to a manager or a fucking bouncer is like next to near impossible.
But they are doubling down on this policy. They could have said, you know what, it was wrong.
The reason they're doubling down on the policy is because he's wearing, and you got to hear me out on this, okay?
Take a long sip of water.
He's wearing a turban. That doesn't look like a turban. It looks like a do-rag.
But it is on his driver's license.
I understand.
It's good enough for the government.
I understand that. But you're working in a bar, and you're dealing with people that work in a bar, and all they're seeing is this turban, and it looks like a do-rag, and they'll look no head yet. Because basically, they're probably, and I'm being the devil's advocate here, they're probably thinking a turban is a traditional style turban. They're seeing this and not seeing it as a traditional style turban, and they're seeing it as a do-rag. And if you talking to guys at the fucking door of a bar, it's like talking to a fucking wall.
So then your
shows on my license, you know?
But then your position would be, if I'm reading this right, they were. I understand why this happened. The policy's not good. They should have explained that going forward, that we will educate everybody working the door going forward. That's what I'm reading, how you feel it should have been handled.
Yeah, because the same thing is, if a guy walks in a wearing a yarmulke, are they going to let him in or not?
That's my question. Yarmulke, wig, toupee, shadel for Jewish. Where does it end?
Yeah.
I mean, do you really? And they say, well, it's easy to identify. What's easier? It's the guy in the fucking turban.
But I,
it's not easy.
I.
What's he look like? The one in the turban.
There's so much bullshit you have to do. When you're dealing with people that work in a bar or club, they're so fucking.
I understand. Then own it then. Then own it. Go, listen, this is what's going on. Come back. We'll let you in. They're not saying that. They're like, no, rules are rules. And, you know. I don't know how you enforce that.
Well, yeah, like I said, my whole thing is like, you know, and the thing about it is like, well, just don't wear the turban when you go out. But the thing about it is a religion, because I looked up on the internet. I go, well, is it, you know, is this a religious piece? Is this a freedom of religion thing? Is it used
yes,
for religion?
Of course.
Yes, it is. So on that, no, it's not a matter of him taking the thing off. Okay.
I thought you were going to come at me. Yeah, you got to assimilate. I am stunned and pleasantly surprised.
No, because the whole debate on that is like I said, Davin, I take everything case by case. So basically, if I go, the guy shouldn't be wearing a thing. The guy, well, what if a guy comes in a yarmulke? Can he come in?
You go all the way down the fucking toupee. It's headwear.
Yeah.
That's a schmott on your head. Get that shit off. But you're not fooling anyone.
But the thing about it
is... Stop using it in your comedy act.
The thing about it is, you know, I've worked in bars since I was 16 years old. And the guys at the door, it's impossible to deal with them. You know, if there's...
They're not backing down off their position. That's the problem. You could go, it'd be really easy to go, you know what, bail on us for not being aware of this scenario. We are now going forward. All of our staff will be trained on this. We apologize. We'd welcome you back. You fucking do that. You say, they're not doing that, though.
It's bad optics. I'm not going to sit here and argue about that.
Well, bad optics. I think they're going to fucking lose a lawsuit. I mean, he could sue them. They're a protected class. You can't do that. You can't keep people out based on religious freedom. If that was the case, there'd be no Jews in fucking country clubs.
Like I said, we do not allow hats or headwear in order to more capably identify people inside the establishment.
Now here's the other thing to that. A lot of times, Orthodox Jews, myself included, will not wear a yarmulke, but will wear a baseball cap. So then what do? They go, hey, no baseball caps. Well, I'm an Orthodox Jew. Well, then why are you wearing a yarmulke? Because I don't wear a yarmulke. So, I mean, that's even fucking stickier. This is more cut and dry, I think. If the guy's fucking wearing a turban, let him in. It's on his fucking driver's license. This is more cut and dry. But the Orthodox Jew who wants to wear a baseball cap instead of a yarmulke, that gets even more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I think the Harbor Grill is making a mistake. I think they will lose a lawsuit if it gets that far. And as you said, it is bad optics. You can't exclude people like that. You just can't.
Yeah, and it's like anyone wearing any type of hat is welcome during normal restaurant hours. And you know what? Port Jefferson is a very nice area, so I don't know if there's an element coming in there that for example, gangs or something
sure.
like that. I mean, Port Jefferson.
That'd be an element.
Yeah, and it's very crowded. A very nice area, though, you know.
Yeah, and this guy's a fucking EMT and he serves a community. I mean, it just sucks. I think they're making a mistake. But I'm glad you and I agree. It does not sound like they're going to rectify until they're forced to legally,
yeah.
Which is just a
shame.
Well,
like I said, that night dealing with door staff and stuff like that, I could see why they stood firm on that. You know, well, I don't care what it says on that, blah, blah. Yeah, you've dealt with guys like that going into a fucking place. The guy's making it a matter out of it, which he has the right to do.
Wants to hang out with his friends.
You know, and it's like it's not a matter of taking that off. They didn't use the right judgment, and they're not using good optics either. So we'll see what happens.
All right. A rugby player is fired over his religious beliefs. See, we're going down the fucking slippery slope here.
Yeah.
Israel. But now, this is not in the United States. This is in Australia, so it's a little different. Israel Folau's status as the unrivaled star of Australian rugby wasn't enough to save his job in the wake of a social media post that condemned gay people and other so-called sinners to eternal damnation. I mean, what's the point of partial damnation? If you got a damn, go all the way, eternally.
Well, yeah, you don't want a half-assed damnation.
No.
You know, I mean, it's eternal. You got to, you know.
You're gonna have to fucking sit it out, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, like, the devil's a busy man. He's not going to handle
it. He doesn't have a chance to look. Oh, you should have been out of here 3 days. We don't got time
for
that.
No. You know what brimstone costs? You know, time and shit.
I mean, fire he's got plenty of, but the brimstone, that's what really kills the margins.
You know, even he's got to cut. Even he's got to cut a profit.
Well, you know, God should really work with him to get me, you know.
The tariffs.
Hurts the march. I'm just writing this down because I don't have Pip here.
Right.
I wonder if she's still alive. Let's hope she is. I don't know.
I'm worried about her, man.
So really am I. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah, I know, but you know.
Let's see, she texted? No, we've heard nothing from Pip. No. Okay. Anyway, back to this. Back to eternal damnation. Rugby Australia on Friday. What?
Back to eternal damnation.
Rugby Australia on Friday terminated Folau's 4-year contract 10 days after an independent panel found the 30-year-old fullback guilty of a high-level breach of the player's code of conduct for his contentious post in mid-April. Folau can appeal the decision, but it appears, at least for now, that his career has gone down in flames. The saga has thrown Australia's preparations for the Rugby World Cup into turmoil. A self-described devout Christian, Folau said he was merely posting a passage from the Bible, and he refused to take down the online post. For Rugby Australia, it boiled down to a contract issue. We want to stress that this outcome is a painful situation for the game, Rugby Australia chief executive Relaine Castle told a news conference in Sydney, broadcast live TV. But Rugby Australia's position remains the same. Through his actions, left us with no choice but to pursue a course of action resulting in today's outcome. The code of conduct change sparked debate in Australia about freedom of speech and the right of players to express their beliefs. It also followed a warning Folau received from Rugby Australia last year over a social media post that drew criticism from some rugby followers, including a major sponsor of the game. In February, Folau signed a contract extension to remain with the Sydney-based New South Wales Waratahs and Australian rugby until the end of 2022. He was set to play an important role in Australia's World Cup campaign starting in September. Now he's likely to be looking abroad to continue his professional playing career. Folau issued a statement Friday saying, "I am deeply saddened by today's decision to terminate my employment." He said he was considering his options. "I believe it is my duty as a Christian to share God's word," he said. "Upholding my religious beliefs should not prevent my ability to work or play for my club and country." Castle said the Rugby Australia contract outline the expectations of professional players, although there has been speculation about inconsistencies regarding when certain clauses were inserted that reportedly could form the basis of an appeal for Folau. "Our clear message to all rugby fans today is that we need to stand by our values and the qualities of inclusion, integrity, discipline, respect, and teamwork," Castle said. Pride in Sport co-founder Andrew Purchase commended Rugby Australia for its decisive action. "We know that statements of sporting figures can have a profound impact on our culture as well as have a great influence on the community, especially young people," he said. "Homophobic and transphobic discrimination is not acceptable in sports and individuals, irrespective of their social or professional stature, will be held accountable for their words and actions." Folau has been the undisputed star in his 73 test matches for the Wallabies since he joined the rugby union ranks following professional contracts in Australian rules football and in rugby league, where he's also represented. I'm sorry, I'm struggling tonight. I'm just all congested.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a fucking week.
Yeah, where he also was represented in Australia. In his most recent Super Rugby match for the Sydney-based North South Wales Waratahs.
It's not so easy.
Waratahs, no. Folau scored his 60th try, the most of any player in the tournament, breaking the record of former New Zealand winger Doug Howlett. Folau told people in his church on the weekend that he had chances to potentially make this situation a little bit easier and he could have gone back to play the game, but he refused to compromise on his beliefs. Some players have openly supported Folau's right to express his beliefs, and there's been speculation that other devoutly Christian players may walk out on their contracts in Australia. "Thank you to those who've spoken out in my defense, some of whom do not share my beliefs but have defended my right to express them," Folau said. Castle said he'd been in touch with professional players and assured that the Rugby Australia fully supports their right to their own beliefs and nothing that has happened changes that. "But when we're talking about inconclusiveness in our game, we are talking about respecting differences as well," Castle said. "We say rugby is a game for all and we mean it."
I'll tell you what, this is really tricky because you got a guy's religious beliefs and you got business.
Gotta see the contract.
But even if we saw the contract, I mean, is it right for a contract to state you can't practice your religion? It really comes to proselytizing. Because
there's no hookers involved with this.
Right. Anyway. Some Christians, as you know, believe part of their religion is proselytizing, the born-agains, your Jehovah's Witnesses. Part of the religion is trying to convert you. I call those people fucking annoying. But they still have a right to do it.
Right.
So even if he did violate the contract, is that even allowed in a contract to prevent somebody from practicing their religion? He posted it on his social media page. And normally I'm like, well, you know, and I was thinking about this, you know, well, you know, the contract's the contract. He violated the contract. But maybe that even shouldn't even be allowed in a contract.
Now, that's an interesting point because I know you. The contract's the contract. And that's knowing that, that was the first part of my opinion. Let's see the contract. Now, it's all about the contract. And
maybe that shouldn't be allowed in the contract.
But the thing about it is, let's see the contract and let's see this brought up. Maybe it could be overturned where they could, if they bring this to court, where they could overturn it and say, you know, yeah, it's in the contract. However, what you're writing in your contract is not constitutional. It's got to go along with Australian law. We don't know Australian law, but it's interesting.
Not tonight, we don't.
No. We'll learn it next week and have a full discussion.
We'll update you all.
Yes. But, you know, that's the thing. And you know me with freedom of speech. You got to write this. But if you signed a contract and there's something on there, but then if it gets in front of the judge and it's like, well, is this part of the contract?
And why is he even fucking signing that contract if he knows he's going to violate it?
Money.
Right. But then you go, well, do you have a right to bitch? You knew it was in the contract.
That's the thing, too.
Now you're just getting attention to yourself.
And that's what it boils down to.
It's a very tricky thing.
That's what it boils down to. We all need to see the contract to make a really,
I think the answer is the league goes, listen, we don't support what he's saying. We don't agree with it. We don't agree with his message. We've told our sponsors this. We don't condone anything he says. However, we do support religious freedom, and his religious freedom involves proselytizing. So take that for what it's worth. But just know that these words are his, not ours. I mean, that's what you could do, but they probably still lose. But, well, how could you pay this guy money to spout such hate? But it's a really tough situation.
Yeah, yeah. And you could say, you know, people have been gone for less. You know, I mean, it basically it's all optics.
I think it's a shitty thing to have in a contract. If it's allowed to legally be in the contract, if it's allowed, then he's in the wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't think that should be allowed in the contract.
Right, and that depends on how, you know. Like I said, we're talking about two different countries. Like in American judicial system, I think, you know, that would not be.
I don't think you put that in.
I don't think you can. In Australia, I think they can. You know, you got a guy that makes all this money. He gets this big contract. I'll sign, you know. And maybe he felt, well, you read that. And it's like, well, if I'm stating a religious belief, you know, I mean.
It's just so fucking divisive.
Yeah. You know, there were people. And
why is everybody with the most hateful religious beliefs have to be the ones that fucking go sharing it all over the place?
Yeah,
there's not a lot of treat others as you treat yourself. It's more like you're doing that wrong, and we don't like it. Put your vag away.
Because I think the thing with religion is that everybody, it's almost like going on vacation, okay? Because going into the never world, you know, you're betting on all this stuff. So when's the next big vacation?
You I don't get going? Vacation. I fucking work vacations.
Okay,
so I'll be in Florida in August.
But you went to Italy, right?
That was a couple years ago. That was my last vacation.
You're crazy for going to Italy. Who would want to go to Italy? You're out of your fucking mind. And the way you're looking at me, hey, fuck you, man. That's religion. Because you go into this place, you're looking forward to the guy, and somebody's going, really? You're going, you know?
Yeah, but here's the difference. I saw pictures. Nobody showed me pictures of heaven.
Yeah, I got a book.
I know Italians. I don't know one fucking angel.
Yeah. You don't know. You've known me.
You work for the other team at best. it's just a really interesting story, but yeah, I mean, that's religious freedom thing.
Joe's girl brought up an interesting point here. She wrote that I've heard of not being allowed to wear religious jewelry to jobs if they tell you not to, and she said that's in the USA.
I don't think that's right either.
I don't think that's right
unless it's a safety issue. Like if you're working machinery. And right. You can't wear chains and stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
Then yes, then I get that. If right. it's a safety issue, sure. But I mean,
yeah, and you know, it's
you can't wear your cross to work the reception at the Hampton Inn. That's a fucking problem.
Yeah, but if you're working a lathe or something like that,
a what?
A lathe is like when you make lathe something. It spins very rapidly, and then you take a thing and you trim it down. And stuff like that.
Is it like a sharpener?
Yeah. And okay. you make a lathe, like, hey, you make a candlestick or something like that. You never took shop class?
I did. That was high school. That's the least of my concerns, the shit I forgot.
All right. Okay.
I can't remember algebra either. I probably should remember that more than fucking sharpening a candle.
Yeah. At least you took algebra. I couldn't.
You had an option not to?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you, like, special?
No.
I'm not sure.
No.
I feel you might have been.
I mean, my senior year, I got out at 12 o'clock. They had all my classes stretched out, and I said, I want everything backed up to 12 o'clock, and I got out at 12 and went to work.
Yeah, I understand that. That's fine, but before 12, I feel algebra should have been in there. I didn't take algebra in the 7th and 8th grade.
Really?
Did you take geometry?
No, did I take algebra? No, I took algebra. I did. No, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. I did take algebra.
Probably still corrected a lot in that fucking class.
Yeah, boy.
Did you take calculus?
No.
I did not take calculus.
No, calculus is heavy duty, yeah.
Algebra was no fucking bullshit either. Yeah.
But some people have the mind for that, you know?
Yes, and that's go back to the story we were talking about before. Yes, and if they have that mind for it, we should encourage them. We shouldn't let their circumstances hold them down.
Well, hopefully they look at the algebra, how they did in the algebra as part of the review.
I'm sure they will.
You know, like I said, I want to see how they're reviewing people on that.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that rugby player.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just wish people – I mean, I get it. You have to – why do you always have to proselytize? I don't even know if I'm saying that right. All the shit that people hate. Well, can't you proselytize some of the good shit?
Well, so, you know, the born-agains are good. God, they drive you nuts. I work with a couple of born-agains.
No, they – no.
Every
God, they drive us nuts? Oh, they're driving us nuts for God.
Oh, but it's like, oh, Jesus. And it's like – what a, and it's bad enough when they tell you all this stuff, but what if they're right and you get up to heaven and now you got to hear, I told you so for eternity. You see? Look what I, all right, we get it. All right, it's been every day for 3,427 years. Here's, I got to hear this
here's
shit.
My problem.
I get it. You here's, were right.
Here's my problem with born-agains, and then we'll move on to the last story. Born-agains fucking raised holy hell for a good portion of their life. And then they found themselves in a really shitty position, and they decided to discover God. Whereas I have not raised anywhere near the holy hell. I've not had those good times. And now you want to fucking rain on my parade? Fuck you!
I'm in a situation that me and my friend, my circle of friends, were evaluating something, where a certain friend of ours, it was his turn religion.
And they were probably a shit kicker in their youth.
In his youth. And also, I think he's doing more than kicking shit in his adulthood. So we're all looking into this. So, you know, it's very interesting. But Joe's Girl writes, under certain circumstances, a business with a dress code or grooming standards may decline to honor a team member's request to wear a religious cross to work. She found that online.
Was there a case? Was that ever brought up between the courts?
Let's see if she...
I don't see... I don't know.
See, what I
don't know any line of work wearing a cross, as long as it can't interfere with safety,
yeah,
would be an issue.
Basically, the rule has been with dress at a business. If a certain business represents a certain thing, like this establishment, we represent ourselves in this manner, a manner of dress, manner of action, so on and so forth. You can demand some things. And you will, if you get called to the court, but it's under the criteria of this, and the judge, you know, it will be ruled that, okay, this is the criteria of this, and this is how they're portraying this, and it has to be along these lines.
So, like, no, that's fine. They go, listen, we don't normally allow facial hair. However, for your religious belief, you know, you can have facial hair because it's not a safety hazard. You got to keep it trimmed. I think that's a good compromise. Keep it neat and trimmed. You can have your beard for your religious beliefs. Just can't get scraggly.
Think a case of that might be the fire department. I don't think the fire department allows beards.
That's different because you got to wear the mask.
Yeah.
You got to wear the mask when you get in it.
Well, they think you catch fire.
No, but, no, there's a seal.
Yeah.
There's a seal when you wear the oxygen mask. Right. And if you have any facial hair, you know, unless it's like a really tight, short mustache, yeah, it breaks the seal. It's a safety hazard. That's different. If somebody's safety is involved, then yes, I'm all for safety first. If not, fucking let people be people. Enough.
Yeah.
All right. So a bill to protect businesses like Chick-fil-A. You ever have Chick-fil-A?
No.
That donates to anti-LGBTQ groups passed in the Texas House of Representatives on Tuesday. Texas becoming the new Florida. The measure moves now to the state Senate, where a version of the bill passed last week for a final vote before heading to the desk of Republican Governor Greg Abbott.
Hey, Abbott!
Dubbed the Save Chick-fil-A Bill, SB 1978 would prohibit government entities from taking adverse action against individuals or organizations for their membership in affiliation with or contribution to a religious organization. Proponents say the measure is necessary to protect businesses like Chick-fil-A, a proudly anti-LGBTQ fast food company, which was barred earlier this week from opening in the San Antonio International Airport. The San Antonio City Council voted 6-4 in March to remove the Chick-fil-A from a concession agreement with the city's airport. San Antonio is a city full of compassion, and we do not – it's a pretty liberal city, as I recall. And we do not have room in our public facilities for a business with a legacy of anti-LGBTQ behavior, Councilman Roberto Trevino said, according to NBC News. Opponents of SB 1978 say the so-called religious liberty measure will largely serve to license discrimination against LGBTQ communities. This bill is going to pass, let's face it, State Rep. Celia Israel said Monday, according to the Texas Tribune. It's cloaked in religious freedom, but the genesis and the nexus of this bill is in hatred. Members of the Texas House's LGBTQ caucus killed an earlier version of the measure, HB 3172, through a parliamentary maneuver at the beginning of May. But the Texas Senate reviewed the legislation with SB 1978 and voted on it last week without notifying the public or eliciting feedback from constituents, according to NBC. State Representative Julie Johnson, a Democrat, a founding member of the LGBTQ caucus, not caucus, caucus, in an interview with NBC called the Senate bill a concerted effort to violate constitutional protections that we've had for centuries with the separation of church and state. During Monday's first House vote on the legislation, lawmakers approved an amendment to remove a provision that would allow Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to bring lawsuits against potential violators of the statute. Individuals and organizations, though, would be able to sue entities they believe to have violated the statute and may seek representation from religious liberty firms like the First Liberty Institute, the Texas Tribune notes. The state Senate must approve the House's amendment before the bill goes to the Abbott for a signature. The governor is expected to sign the bill, as this tweet from Monday evening indicates. In a Facebook post on Monday, Johnson vowed to continue fighting the legislation. I have no doubt that SB 1978 will be fought in the courts at every level at great expense to the taxpayers, Johnson wrote. The members who voted yes on SB 1978 today effectively signed their signatures on that voice. We will remember it next November. All right, a little background on Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is owned by very religious people. That's why they are closed on Sunday. People love the Chick-fil-A. Supposedly very good chicken. I've had it. It's fine. But they also, because of their religion, are very anti-LGBTQ. So now we're talking about a Chick-fil-A being on government property. That's what this comes down to, if I'm reading this correctly.
Right. A quick thing from Joe's Girls. Reasonable accommodation. Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 requires that when asked for by an employee, reasonable accommodation be made to allow the associate to observe religious beliefs, such as wearing a cross. A reasonable accommodation refers to making an exception to an internal policy if the employee can demonstrate a need for the accommodation and the request is being made because of a conflict between work and the worker's religious beliefs. That's from the USA Network.
All right, so you can wear your shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
So that. So back to the matter.
Don't make me fucking reread that all again. I hope you were listening.
Well, first we discussed that. Now the title. What was the
you motherfucker? SB 1978.
Now SB 1978 says that they can't because of their religious belief or
no. They want them. There was a Chick-fil-A at the San Antonio airport, and they got it revoked.
Okay.
And this, if I'm reading this properly, once it allowed. And the airport, of course, is government property.
Right. Now, basically with Chick-fil-A, the owner, obviously we know his beliefs that he is not for homosexuality. However, nobody has ever received, no LGBT, gay, or transgender person has ever been refused service there or has been harassed there or, you know. So
as far
it's
as
not,
I know.
Right. But they have not. You know,
but they are donating to supposedly to anti-LGBTQ organizations, which I guess do those things.
They've been donating to it.
Yes, that's what. Yeah, they did. That's what the story says. That the owners donate to the anti-LGBTQ causes and stuff like that.
Now with that in mind? Is it, you know, the chapter 12 of the We Hate Faggots, you know, committee, or is it a church? Is it a church?
I don't know. It's a good question.
And that's the thing. If you turn around and go, well, they're donating to who? Are they donating to the Westboro Baptist Church? Are they donating to
you don't really hear a lot from them anymore.
Well, just saying. We get it. God hates fags. All right, go away.
Wow, Joe Curry, ladies and gentlemen.
Stop it. But that's
me. I didn't do anything. But
that's also a thing to look at, because you have to look at several things here. Yes, we know the owner's beliefs. He's donating to. All right, is it a church that has? It's like example, the Catholic Church that frowns on homosexuality. Is that who is he donating? Or is it a hate group? Also, has there been incidences of people of the alternate lifestyle getting harassed at the store? Have they been refused service? Have they been shunned? Has there been comments made while they're in the store? You know, that all plays into that.
I would assume no for this particular one.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of, you know, the only thing that I would have an exception, and this is going to the airport, and sometimes also a Chick-fil-A going into a sporting arena, is the arc closed on Sunday. So if you're going to have them come in and you need a concession there, they're going to be closed on Sunday, and if you're having games on that, this is doing a hill of shit for you having them in your venue.
That's interesting.
You know, and I think that they're using that as an underlying factor.
You know, so, I mean, like you don't want things that are deemed as unwelcoming on government property. But I mean, do enough people know the backstory of Chick-fil-A?
But the backstory is this. The backstory is yes, the founder of the company is not for gay rights. He's not, you know, he's not, you know, he does not like homosexuality. That's his opinion. In practice, day to day of store operations, has anybody been discriminated? Has anybody been rude service? Has anybody been harassed?
But I think the it comes down to is, do you want them making money on government property? Do you want something that is exclusive? Making money on government property.
Once again, it has to be researched more. Where is his money being funded to? Is it an anti-gay group that hates, or is it going to a church? Once again, if it's not, it's also, do I want a government property? But it's also a freedom of religion thing. It's also freedom of religion.
Well, I mean, again, that's the problem with these religions. They sure do veer to the hate, don't they?
With these. Every religion veers to the hate. That's how they show love.
That's so. Is that what your mom said when she was beating you? This hurts me more than it hurts you.
What do you think, the fucking Crusades was a big laugh?
When you smack your wife around? Why do you make me do this to you? Don't you know how much this hurts?
All about hate.
I mean, that's fucking crazy.
Of course it is.
But I mean, you look at the. Yeah, I'm torn on this thing.
Like I said, it boils down to the nuts and bolts of it. You know, I mean, and the one thing that swayed me on this is has there been any instances of harassment or refusal of the service?
You know what? It's just easier for the government. We just go, you know what? Well, get a store down the block. It's just not worth it to us. You're controversial. You have a right to sell your chicken, but you know what? We could put a Burger King there, and the worst thing people say about Burger King is they don't like the creepy Burger King.
Yeah,
it's just easier. I mean, at some point, you just go, I'm sorry, Chick-fil-A. This is the climate we live in. You've made the decision. You have your right to sell your chicken deliciousness, but it's just not worth the hassle for us to have you here.
Yeah,
you know. And let me tell you, the old man dies, maybe.
And let me tell you something. If I'd like to find out how many people in 10 are gay. And the reason why is that you go to a Chick-fil-A.
I don't know. How wide open is 10's ass?
How can we be so fucking poignant and stupid within 15 seconds?
We've had a lot of practice.
But here's the deal. I'd like to know that statistic, because you go to a Chick-fil-A, that place is a mob scene.
People
always. Always.
And
like I said, so with
I
that in mind.
I will not seek out Chick-fil-A's. I mean, I ate one in the past year or so because my friends wanted to go there. I'm not going to not go.
I'm not going to stand in a line like the Great Census for a chicken sandwich.
I will fucking search the Holy Land for a tuna sandwich, though.
You know, shit. But
I'll settle on a Chinese buffet. Dude,
fucking four states.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Find one tuna sandwich.
It was ridiculous. You're a patient man.
Well, I had to pee every 20 seconds coming home.
Yes,
so
you did, yeah.
I mean, it's a trade-off.
God forbid you coordinate with when I was stopping for Subway.
Well,
but you know what? It's just not fucking worth. Like, if you're looking at it from a business standpoint, like if you're running the airport,
it's
like
not
a business,
but
it's not worth it.
It's not worth it because I'm running the airport or I'm running a sports venue. The business model is.
But they are in sports venues.
But that's the thing. But it just seems to me that they're closed on. You know, you're closed on Sunday.
People love it though. They make so much money on the road.
Right, you know, but it's like, so what we're going to do? We're going to make money, you know. But you want to know something? If Chick-fil-A turns around and goes, we realize we're closed on Sunday. However, we will pay you such and such. As if we were open on Sunday, knock yourself out and still, you know, do the chicken sandwiches.
Same thing with the abortion thing. It comes down to your religious beliefs and my freedoms. You know, it always comes down to that in this country.
Yeah.
They are two competing.
Well, when you have a country that was founded on religion.
No,
you know,
it's founded on religious freedom.
Religious freedom, but it plays so. Yes, it was, but so much of it plays into it. You know, and like
that
I said,
there's a reason there's separation of church and state.
I understand.
And if you're doing that, the airport is state. But I mean, it's hard. I mean, you really
but
have to
not,
stretch to make
but
the Chick-fil-A
not,
church.
But it's not like the Catholic Church. You know,
they do have chapels in airports.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Our Lady of Flight in JFK.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that. When I was a kid, we went to Our Lady of Flight. I guess we were saying our prayers again on the plane.
I think there's been some interesting stories. These are not easy issues.
No, not at all.
What
not
happened
at all.
Today was, and this is disconcerting but not surprising. So I guess there was a judge that was fighting gay marriage for the past 8 years. So, of course, the Senate moved him along.
And then he finally accepted him and got married.
But I guess this guy's going to be on the bench. You know, and I don't like the fact – I wouldn't want far-left judges on the bench, and I don't like these far-right judges on the bench. And Trump is he's keeping his promise in that regard. He's fucking flooding the courts with far-right judges. Mm-hmm. That's going to have a profound effect on people's liberties the next 40 years. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's also going to be very interesting for the 2020 election.
It's not a winning argument. It's not a winning argument for the Republicans. I mean, some of these abortion laws are so restrictive that you got Donald Trump and Mitt Romney go, it's a little much. Oh, yeah, Pat Robertson going, it's a little much. When Pat Robertson is the voice of reason.
Pat Robertson?
Pat Robertson. Right. When he's the fucking voice of reason, you've jumped all the right. Sanity shark.
All right, everybody's got to relax. All right.
Pat Robertson goes on the 700 Club and is like, it's a little much.
Really?
Yes, I swear
wow,
to God.
Holy cow. Go.
Yeah. So, wait.
Guys looking at you. Know,
when the guy who blames every natural disaster on the gays, you know, I mean, come on, you got to fucking stop with this shit.
Yeah.
What was it? Like something, there's like a quote out there, something like, you know, abortion should be a freedom, but should be used as little as possible. You know, I think
why it leans so far right is when they had, especially with the law that we have in New York, where they can abort up to like right before birth or something like that.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that. I mean, listen, if somebody's going to die, but I don't even see how you can abort right before birth. It's a fucking person.
But that's the thing. And Cuomo stamped his foot and said, damn it all. So I think what's happening is that the abortion. You know, the abortion laws being relaxed has gotten so far right that even people that are pro-abortion is going, we got to relax. Where it's getting in some places is we got to enforce this more. So I think I think every action has a reaction.
Right,
you know
but
what I'm
saying? You can't overturn Roe versus Wade. And that might happen. And that's what Trump wants.
I think, but
that's the conflict for you because you're not one to take away people's freedom.
I understand that, but it's the key thing is how the states feel about that because basically the whole thing with Roe versus Wade is basically it's up to the but it's up to the states to decide where we want to go. We've also seen how was it Alabama that passed that radical law?
Alabama,
yeah. Alabama.
Ohio has one similar. And there's a couple of those states.
So, and like I said, I think it's a reaction.
I think Georgia passed something similar to that. Yeah. So you're seeing the movie industry move away from Georgia.
But like I said, I think it's a reaction to the way they set up the New York law now that people have gotten scared and say, you know what, maybe we should outlaw. You know, maybe it's getting too far.
There was the radio interview with the Virginia governor. Who I can't believe is still in there. The Virginia governor said something like, oh, yeah, something to the effect that, yeah, after the baby's on the table, then you discuss whether to abort. It's like, what? No, that's infanticide, you motherfucker.
Right. So,
which there's no law for. Right. He just said.
Right. Now, with that in mind, we have a situation right now where you have the far-reaching parties, the far-reaching elements of the parties, far left and far right, kind of, you know, affecting what's going on.
Yeah, it's just really hard to, you know, I posted this story on my Facebook page. You know, there was this girl who was, I think it was in Ohio, who was raped. Oh, not, yeah, it was an 11-year-old girl was kidnapped, raped, and she lives in Ohio, and I guess they don't have money to get it, so because people with money go to another state. So now an 11-year-old who was kidnapped has to bring this fucking baby to term. I mean, it's the worst.
Unconscionable.
Yeah, because it's after 6 weeks. It's fucking common sense says, whoa, slow down. But these laws.
You know, you've got, it's the religious right reacting to the far left. There's no, I don't see any, you know, the middle of both parties,
We were going to have a middle judge in Merrick Garland. He was a fucking middle of the road guy. Before Obama nominated him, the Republicans go, why can't you nominate a guy like Merrick Garland? So Obama nominates a guy named Merrick Garland. Now we're not going to meet with him. He was a middle of the road fucking guy. I like when you don't know how the judges are going to fucking vote. I don't like it when you know. All right, well the conservatives are going to vote this way and the liberals are going to vote that way. That's not the way the law is supposed to work. I'd like to think, and it doesn't go this way. I like to think these people are deliberating over the facts, and really trying to, you know, drill down and get the best legal answer to this, as opposed to, well, this is against my religious beliefs, or this is, I believe this or that, and then they go with that. I don't
know. Both parties are going to pony up their guy. Whatever their policy is.
Not good for the country. No. And I do think this abortion issue is a loser for the Republicans. I mean, we saw women come out in record numbers in 2018. You're going to carry some states with it, but I think it's and especially when you see, like, in Alabama, when you see 25, it's 25 fucking men that passed the law.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, it's a loser.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. And like I said, also, I think it was a reaction from the far left on the New York law. I think that's what got them all, you know,
you can't be aborting babies at 8 months old.
I am saying right now today that I think this is due to the both extreme fringes of the party.
For me, abortion should be allowed except in extreme circumstances up until the baby could live on its own. Now I'm talking about with monitors and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like 4 months. A baby's just not viable.
Right.
You can't do anything. 5 months maybe. You know, there comes a certain point where a baby can live or can't live.
Yeah.
If the baby can't live, then it's not a fucking baby. You got to have an abortion.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they're not doing that now. 6 weeks is fucking ridiculous. Women miss one fucking cycle. They don't know. Women miss their cycle because they work out. All of a sudden, a woman starts a workout program, and it changes her cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you know, the show starts at 6:30. That's not the way the woman's cycle works. Like, every Tuesday, the show starts at 6:30. It's more like Pip. She's going to be here. She's not going to be here. We'll know when you know. That's kind of like what it is.
The woman's fighting for her life right now. We compare it to her period.
But yes! But I mean, some things are reliable and you can bank on, and some things are not. I mm-hmm. mean, it's just too much. All right, I didn't want to get into all abortion. So we'll do something kind of fun.
Yay!
Listen, this show was created on the fly, okay?
Right.
We'll do some terms from the 20th century that may or may not be used anymore. I'm going to guess not, since I'm bringing them up.